This week takes us to Splendora, Texas, where a young boy is tied to a tree and lit on fire, and where it would take over a decade for his murderer to be put in prison. This is episode 69 of Texas 1031. Hey everyone, this is Hannah. This is Texas 1031, and this is a Texas true crime podcast. I have another suggested case for you all today. It was suggested by Jason, so thank you very much. And let's get into the case. It'll be a quick one. I think I tried to record this episode, I don't know, twice yesterday at different points over and over again. I was sneezing so fucking much. It was incredibly annoying. So let's hope that that doesn't creep back up on me as I'm doing this right now. So picture it, Splendora or Cleveland, Texas, 1998. I saw both cities listed as where this took place. They are right next to one another. I'm pretty sure it's Cleveland, but let's list Splendora too. I don't want to get yelled at. So anyways, Sunday, June 28th was a special day for Robbie Middleton. And that was because it was his 8th birthday. In an extra celebratory mood, Robbie used some of his birthday money to go and buy some fireworks for the upcoming holiday. And then he planned on walking through the woods at the back of his house, which connected the neighborhood to another, where his friend Beto Padilla lived. His plan was to walk to Beto's and see if he wanted to stay the night at his house to celebrate his birthday. As a birthday gift, Robbie had been given a camping tent, so his mother, Colleen, had set it up in their home's backyard so that Robbie and Beto could have a sleepover. Colleen is later quoted saying, "It was really truly one of the happiest days of his life. He just really loved his birthdays." Around 6:15 p.m., less than 30 minutes after watching her son run into the woods, Colleen Middleton would see her son again. This time, however, Robbie was lying in the street, just down from their house, surrounded by neighbors. According to two witnesses who found Robbie running into the road, they said he didn't appear to be in any pain as he laid calmly on the hot asphalt. He kept saying that he couldn't see and that he was cold and thirsty. Colleen didn't recognize him and couldn't comprehend what she saw in front of her. Robbie's father also ran to his son, with Robbie yelling, "Daddy, I can't see you." This was due to the fact that Robbie had lost his eyesight during a brutal attack. The 8-year-old was naked. His skin was melting off of his body, and his eyelids, ears, hair, lips, and genitals were all burned off. Robbie suffered deep third-degree burns to 99% of his body. Even though his skin was literally melting off of his fucking body, little Robbie was able to tell his mother the name of a neighborhood teenage boy who had tied him to a tree, doused him in gasoline, and then set him on fire. Robbie was life-flighted to Shriners Hospital in Galveston, with many doctors predicting that he wouldn't survive his injuries. The day after his attack, Robbie endured a lengthy surgery, one that removed the majority of the burned tissue on his body, leaving only a quarter-sized portion of the skin on the soles of his feet. This skin, however, was also partially removed and sent to Boston as grafting materials to essentially grow him some new fucking skin in a lab. Robbie suffered through unimaginable pain and over 200 surgeries. I probably already talked about this before at some point on the show, but quick little story time. I dated a guy who was a sous chef at a bougie restaurant that I worked at, and he actually had a fryer explode on his right arm and like the right side of his face and neck. And I had to go to the hospital with him and help him recover. And it was very traumatic and awful. So imagine that times a million. Like, you want to die. You don't want to survive. You're praying for a fucking overdose of morphine, you know? And I'm going to post pictures of Robbie's picture on Instagram. His before, I guess, and after. And it's really rough. It's really sad. But he's kind of a baddie because he got tattoos later, which is cool. So anyways, back to the story. While Robbie is fighting for his life in the hospital, police locate the tree Robbie had been tied to behind a barn near Robbie's home. The tree itself showed evidence of being burned. The clay ground beneath the tree was covered in soot, and the base of the tree was charred. Now, I saw two different sources list two different ligatures that Robbie was tied to the tree with. I saw rope and fishing wire, but either way, it is believed from Robbie's account of the events that once this ligature melted or burned off from the fire, he was able to escape and run to the road where everyone found him burning. Having located the scene of the crime, police next locate the teenager Robbie was accusing of his attack. Detectives found the boy, and he had an alibi. He claimed he was fishing at the San Jacinto River with friends on the day of Robbie's attack. Several other adult witnesses corroborated his story in addition to his friends. So here's where the investigation gets very bizarre and fun. During a truly happenstance interview, a news station cameraman for Channel 11 News was photographing and filming the tree and the scene where Robbie was attacked at. This guy sees a boy standing near the area. 13-year-old Don Collins begins to speak to the man behind the camera. Don told the man, quote, "He fell about four times. You can see where he fell. I'm surprised he made it. If he wouldn't have made it, nobody would have found him." Don was referencing the fact that Robbie had fallen four times while fleeing the area where he was attacked. Like, he physically just kept running and falling onto the ground. This interview, I guess you could call it, with Don aired just a couple of days after Robbie's attack. Obviously, law enforcement was like, "Oh, hey, Don, let's maybe have a chat, yeah?" So just to like recap and clarify, for whatever reason, Robbie told his mom, you know, when he was melting into her on the road, that it was some other kid that did this to him. I don't know why he did that. I don't know why he named this random kid. I think his name was Rex, who was actually, you know, on a fishing trip with friends, probably again because he was fucking melting and going blind. He also told investigators at one point that his own grandmother had poured hot coffee on him and that's how he got burned. So Robbie obviously wasn't in his right mind. So to save you all the trouble, Don Collins is the guy. Okay, no confusion. Robbie also later told his mom and a nurse that Don did it. So Don is the sadist in question, without a doubt. During Don's interview with law enforcement, Don admits he was on the scene when Robbie came barreling out of the woods on fire. However, Don denies being the perpetrator of the attack and actually points the finger at 9-year-old Beto Padilla, the boy that Robbie was going to see that day. Which, like, how would he, I don't know, if how would he know that he was going to Beto's if he wasn't there? You know what I mean? If he didn't ask Robbie, "Hey, where are you going?" Anyways, investigators were like, "Sure, Don, yeah, we'll look into that. But in the meantime, we're going to hold you in juvenile detention, okay?" During the follow-up investigation, police spoke with witnesses that claimed that Robbie had actually told them that he had seen Don raping another child in the woods weeks prior to his attack, and that this might be the motivation for the assault on Robbie. So, what is the deal with Don, you ask? Great question. Don Collins' mom died 3 years before this incident, and his dad was in prison and MIA pretty much his whole life. Basically, Don was kind of an orphan. He was passed from relative to relative, none of them having true legal custody of him. One of the people he stayed with was his pretty fucking sketchy Uncle John, who just so happened to live right next door to the Middletons. More or less, Don had no supervision or rules or any true authority figure in his life. This kid was literally just living it up, doing whatever he wanted, stealing from people, being a bully, and we'll find out later that he was known to stomp in the heads of kittens during his free time. I don't know. Be original. Start stomping on roaches. Why can't we make that a thing? Leave kittens alone, maybe. Just see how it goes. Anyways, Don will change his story later on. Of course, and say that he wasn't at the scene and didn't know anything anymore after that little casual interview came out. His Uncle John told police and the media that Don was coerced and gave a false semi-confession, I guess, due to not having an adult or an attorney present. But nonetheless, Don stays locked up in juvenile detention. Months later, in January of 1999, Robbie Middleton was finally released from the hospital. And guess who was released from juvenile detention the same month? Oh yes, cool guy, cool guy, Don Collins. He was ultimately released due to lack of evidence and motivation for the crime, and by June of 2000, 2 years after the attack, the charges against Don were dropped entirely, and he moved back in with his Uncle John. And I know what you're thinking, oh, you know, that's got to be awkward. Don moves back in, and it's like, hey, neighbor, how you doing, Robbie? But no, the Middletons had actually moved to Galveston a while prior to be with him during all of his operations and so forth. So there was no awkward exchange when they were both returning home, luckily. Over the next 11 years, Robbie and Don would continue on with their normal, regular lives. Air quotes, normal. Don is still a deviant, and Robbie is now blind, practically deaf, and totally disfigured. So, and normal enough, I guess. Despite this unbelievable setback, Robbie looked forward to putting his trauma behind him and moving on and just being happy. The past is the past. You need to let it go, Robbie once optimistically said. However, after countless operations and irreparable damage to Robbie's organs, at the age of 20 in 2011, Robbie would pass away from cancer that was actually caused by the horrific burn injuries and skin surgeries. And while that is very tragic, here is the silver lining. Just 17 days before he died, Robbie made a 27-minute video deposition during which he named Don Collins as his attacker once again. However, this time Robbie revealed that 2 weeks before the shocking attack, Don had raped him in the same woods where he would later set him on fire. Finally, a true motivation was revealed. So it is kind of believed that when Robbie had come forward to those witnesses at one point saying that he saw Don raping a child in the woods, that this was actually more so believed to have been his story of his rape. I'm sure there was obviously, just like with many victims, a lot of shame and, you know, embarrassment involved in sexual assault. And so maybe this was possibly his way of reaching out, trying to tell someone that something did happen, but it was actually against him. Does that make sense? In the recording, his deposition, Robbie states, quote, "He took me out into the woods where I was later burned. He pulled my clothes down and started raping me," end quote. Regarding his burn attack, Robbie described how he had been walking through the woods when Don crept up behind him and splashed gas in his face. He described how he managed to stumble through the woods and onto the public road near his home. Quote, "Don grabbed me by my shoulder and threw gas in my face. After that, I don't really remember anything," end quote. During his video deposition, Robbie also revealed that as he was on fire, he believed that he heard the voice of another adult male who was speaking to Don. This detail is incredibly important, obviously, yet simultaneously, it has been unfortunately overlooked and doubted in the years to come, and sadly, no one has ever been determined to be this other man. And with that, after almost 12 years after the attack, Robbie Middleton's death was ruled a homicide. So I bet you're thinking, you know, old Donnie is shitting his pants at this point. Well, you'd be wrong. And that is mainly because he was already in prison. Shocking, I know. At 16 years old, a year after Don was released from juvenile detention for the attack on Robbie, he was convicted for the rape of yet another 8-year-old child. Never saw it coming, right? Me neither. He was sent to Brownsville to serve a 4-year sentence in yet another juvenile center. Don completes this sentence, and in 2007, he is arrested again for theft and resisting arrest and is sentenced to 45 days in jail. Oh, look out. And in May of 2009, Don is sentenced to 14 months in jail for failing to register as a sex offender in San Jacinto County. And then finally, in October of 2010, he is sentenced to 2 years for yet again failing to register as a sex offender, this time in Liberty County. But, I mean, at least they're trying to, you know, keep this guy off the streets, and they're not really fucking around. I feel like they kind of already messed that up once, so anyways, in April of 2011, when Robbie dies and his death is labeled a homicide, Don is in jail for this latest failure to register as a fucking child rapist. So let's fast forward a little bit. Around 8 months later, in December of 2011, the Middletons are awarded a staggering dollar amount for the civil lawsuit they filed against Dawn. A jury reached a verdict of $150 billion. That's crazy. However, all parties in the case knew that this money would never really be seen. The goal was truly to just bring attention to the fact that Dawn Collins had never been prosecuted for this horrific crime. After the verdict, the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office set to have the criminal case reopened. However, before this could all happen, prosecutors had to get the go-ahead from the Texas Attorney General at the time, which was good old Greg Abbott. They had to ask Abbott if Dawn Collins could be tried as an adult. This request was made because, remember, at the time of the original crime, Dawn was only 13, and in the state of Texas in 1998, the youngest you could be tried as an adult was 14. However, since the crime, the law now states a child can be tried as an adult starting at the age of 10, which is a bit of an extreme if you ask me. It's almost kind of like, why do you even have the difference between an adult and a juvenile? Because if they can still be tried as an adult at 10, like, what's the fucking point of having separate age ranges? Like, that's just dumb. Anyway, I don't make the laws, obviously. Additionally, the fact that Robbie didn't actually die until Dawn was an adult was also thrown into the mix. In the end, Greg Abbott declined to rule on the matter and left the decision in the hands of the prosecutors and the judge. The judge would have to sit through 3 days' worth of hearings and arguments from both the defense and the state before making their decision. In the end, the judge said, "Fuck you, Dawn Collins, you're getting charged with capital murder as an adult." The only loophole was that the maximum sentence Dawn could receive was 40 years. So, not perfect, but definitely a good compromise. The trial for the murder of Robbie Middleton received permission for a change of venue from Montgomery County to Galveston County due to, you know, the public nature of the crime, and on February 3rd, 2015, the trial began. I'll spare you all the kind of trial bullshit, not because it's not interesting, but because it was a lot of just medical back and forth on how the skin grafts and the surgeries kind of ignited this cancer. And it was just kind of all over the place. His defense was like, no, the cancer technically killed him, but the state was like, yeah, but, you know, he never would have gotten the cancer if he wasn't raped and burned by the defendant. So anyway, I will mention the fact that one of Dawn's other victims, which was his own cousin, by the way, testified that he was raped by Dawn and that Dawn threatened to burn him, quote unquote, like that other boy, if he ever told anyone. So that's not good. After closing arguments, the jury deliberated for approximately 5 hours before reaching a verdict and convicting Donald Collins of capital murder. The punishment phase of the trial was next. Colleen Middleton was called back to the stand to talk about Robbie and everything the Middleton family had gone through over the last 17 years. Additionally, two other people were called to the stand whom Dawn had raped when he was a juvenile, as well as Robbie's sister, Heather, to talk about the time when, like I mentioned earlier, when Dawn stomped her kitten to death because she refused to come outside and play with him. She also testified about a time when Dawn tried to molest her as well. The last witness called was Rebecca Whitlock, Robbie's physical therapist at Shriners Hospital. She talked about how Shriners is set up, all the things that it does for burn children, and what happened to Shriners after Hurricane Ike in 2008. After Ike hit Galveston, Robbie raised money. He passed out pamphlets. He spoke at the Shriners convention in San Antonio about Shriners Hospital and how they saved his life, giving back in his own way to the people and the institution that saved his life. Rebecca also spoke about how Robbie never let his burn injuries define him, how he did so much over his young life to help other burn children, and how he used to sit outside grocery stores and raise money for burn children to travel to Shriners and receive the treatment they needed. The defense, they didn't call any witnesses during the punishment phase, which I think is great. The jury deliberated punishment for about an hour before recommending the maximum of 40 years. Don Collins is currently at the Robertson unit in Abilene, Texas, and is available for parole in just 10 years in 2033. And that is the murder of Robbie Middleton, the biggest fuck you to Don Collins. We have time for quick questions and theories, I think. So question number one, who was the guy Robbie heard speaking to Don during his attack? If he wasn't audibly hallucinating, I think that it could have been Don's Uncle John, but that is really just my opinion. I'm not sure, who else it could have been that could have been associated with this, that could have kept their mouth shut this whole time. I also theorize that Uncle John might have been abusing Don as well in his younger years, and the countless, rapes of other kids and the attack on Robbie was possibly a result of that trauma he experienced. But Don could also just be a habitual sadistic child abuser. I don't know. I think those are really all my questions and theories that I have for it. If you guys have any, obviously reach out to me on social media or email me. But yeah, that is all I have. I hope y'all enjoyed this episode. Keep the requests and suggestions coming, because I will be back with more Texas true crime. And if anyone is listening, happy Halloween.